Hello, hello, and welcome to the College of Creation. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to homebrew all kinds of stuff. Rules, features, monsters, spells, etc. for 5th edition D&D. How you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing very well, Dan. How are you?
So good. This is a show where we challenge each other to create a new thing every week based on prompts that come from our community. So hopefully we come up with two entirely different things. Occasionally we come up with things that are eerily similar, but it's always a surprise and a delight.
Absolutely. Has been the highlight of my week these past few weeks. Absolutely.
We've had some hits. We've had. I would say we're lower. We're low on misses right now, which is
yeah,
good.
Oh,
absolutely. I think we've been. Definitely. Both of us have been pretty consistent here. Feeling pretty good about it.
Especially today.
Yeah, gosh, you feel good about this one?
We've both agreed that some of the prompts are more difficult than others. Mm-hmm. We've had some difficult weeks where it's hard to get the gears moving. This was not one of those weeks for me. I felt very good the entire time.
Amazing.
This was my first idea. We recorded a couple days late last week, so we had a few less days to work on this. It didn't feel like it. I just hit the ground running, man.
Amazing.
I really dug into this one.
I love it.
To remind the listeners, what was our prompt from last week, Dan?
We rolled on our table and from a suggestion on TikTok, I believe from your comments, we had a subclass that slowly turns into a cyborg. There was no definition of which class it was supposed to be for. It was just make a subclass and the character slowly turns into a cyborg over the course of the progression of the class.
Then after we rolled for that, we each rolled on a D12 table to choose which class we'd be making the subclass for. Dan fell on a warlock and I fell on a fighter. I am so excited for both of these. This is an interesting prompt for me for two main reasons. First of all, I'm not a huge fan of fighters. I don't dislike fighters. I just find them not to be very interesting to play for me. I get much more joy playing a caster or a half caster. So this was a challenge for me to like convince myself to play a fighter, right? Make something that I would enjoy playing.
Yeah.
And then secondly, the wording of the prompt is so cool, because when you're making homebrew, one of your jobs is to make this evocative thing that somebody would glance at and be interested in playing, but also your other job is to make it so that anybody can have access to the subclass. So this being a prompt that specifically says cyborg, which is kind of inherently technological, right? Mm-hmm. It is very futuristic. How does somebody who wants to play like a druid multiclass play this subclass? How does somebody that wants to play in a super low tech, like high fantasy setting play this subclass? So it has to be accessible too. And that was such a cool thing to just like ruminate on as I was thinking about this.
That is a fascinating little sort of approach that you took, it sounds like, to it. I'm glad that you had such a good and easy time with this. I'm expecting high quality output from you this time around. I'll tell you that much.
It's certainly not always the case.
No.
There are definitely some things that I've made in the past that have not been the product of such great creative grandeur.
Yeah, that's right. We talked, I think, last week about how which things we've made that were our favorite things. Or the best things that we've made. And it's probably just as fair and maybe a learning experience for us to talk about the worst things that we've made.
Do you have a least favorite subclass that you've made? Or I guess, do you have a least favorite homebrew thing that you've made?
Yeah, I think I do. And mostly it's because I think I just can't seem to figure out how I want the idea to work. And I had a player play a whole campaign as this subclass, and it just It never quite felt
Oh, no.
right, and it was really hard to figure out how to adjust it to make it work. It's a subclass for the fighter called the Drunken Warrior. I mean, it's such a mess, though, is the thing. Like, so you could use a bonus action to drink, and once you hit your limit, and your limit was decided by your constitution modifier, you became drunk. When you're drunk, you have advantage on strength checks, charisma checks, but you have disadvantage on other things. Wisdom, dexterity. You could do more damage. You can't be frightened. You can't be charmed. But, you know, the drunker you get, the more of a difficulty you have hanging on. You know, there were drunken side effects that could take place if you got, like, well over your limit. And you were under the poisoned condition the next day for the first 2 hours of the day. So, you know, there were a lot of drawbacks, as it turned out, and it was hard to make the benefits feel cool and unique without basically feeling like, well, you could just do this for free as a barbarian.
Right.
Just so then we kind of messed around with it, tried to pull it back the other direction, but then it didn't feel like there was this matching of risk and reward in the same way.
That's really hard.
There was an attempt to try and put in this aspect of drunken stunts that would allow you to basically get, like, you know, near sort of battle master features or near invocation features that weren't magical in nature, but just were, like, based on extra things that you could do when you're drunk. You know, casting hideous laughter just because you're a funny drunk. There were some cool ideas, but it just, like, never worked. And honestly, it's not appealing enough for me to really go back and try and fix it.
That sometimes is the killer of any project that's been in the works for too long. The spark fades, and that is really what you need, is be invested in it. I think maybe you can relate to this. When I'm creating something, I never go into it hoping for it to fail or not work or whatever. Anytime I try to make something, I hope that at least pieces of it are successful. I have one that's really similar. I have a bard subclass that's kind of modeled around vampires, but the bard progression is not really built for small incremental changes like vampires need. Bards are what, 3, 3, 5 and 14, 3, 6, and 14, or something like that. And so I felt like there was this constant imbalance between all of the things that I wanted to give to a player who wanted to play a vampire without taking away from somebody that would want to play, like, a Reborn or a Dampier or something like that. So it was into, like, blood magic territory at level 3, which is way too highbrow for what a bard needs to be at level 3. Certainly not enough emphasis on bardic inspiration, which is kind of like the hook for a lot of bardic subclasses. And then the level 14 feature ended up seeming really weak, like it was useless, because you either got everything you wanted at third level or way far away from anything that you wanted until 6 or 14. So it just... Bard is not the way. Bard is not the way for a vampiric subclass, I found,
yeah,
after months
tough.
Of trying to figure it out.
It's definitely the thing where, with mine, I was making it alongside of this player who was interested in exploring this idea.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think she still had fun playing the class, but when I look back on it mechanically, it was just like an absolute mess. I was trying to cram too many things into the subclass. I think you're right. I think fighter is usually really versatile in that way. You can make a lot of different subclasses work in a fighter box.
Mm-hmm.
But this felt like it was too many pieces. And I think I was early on into my journey of homebrewing at that point. So I was overloading way too much out of the gate.
Yeah.
And it would have been done me a lot better to try and simplify, to try and lean into just one aspect of a risk reward. But yeah, now going back, I look at it and I think, well, you know, does that need to exist? I think there are plenty of other things that already exist, or better ideas that I have, that can sort of allow a player to engage in a fun risk reward type gameplay without being this convoluted.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at with
it now. Like you said, just reflavor a barbarian's rage.
Right. Yeah.
To be alcohol consumption and you're
Yeah. Then you don't have the downsides. You know, if you really want that downside to feel important or something, then play, you know, a berserker barbarian, and then you get your, you know, frenzied rage. That'll give you enough of a penalty that you can play with that idea. Yeah, you can play with that idea of balancing this vice with what it does for you in a positive way, a lot more effectively and efficiently without having to also keep track of a million other things. Not everything works. Not everything works all the time.
Try as we might.
I do like the idea of like vampire or undead focused bard, but it feels like
That's what the flavor is there, right? Very charismatic. They're just these grand sweeping gestures from vampires, especially, you know, like Strahd, or, you know, big figures like Dracula. They're always larger than life creatures, which bards easily can be, and mechanically does not hold up, at least not in the way that I was trying to shoehorn it in. I'm sure somebody somewhere can do a much better the job than I tried to do.
That's the thing is like I said, mine was pretty early into my experience level. I'm sure if I went back, I could make something that is workable. But I'm just so much more inspired by other things right now. And it's not something that interests me at the moment. So
yeah, man, you know. It's the spark. That's all it takes. If you're into something, that can lead you through an entire project. If you just hold on to that inspiration, you know?
Well, like this one, it sounds like for you.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
You want to get into it? I'd love to see what you came up with.
I would love to. Let's get right into it. A fighter that slowly over the course of its progression becomes a cyborg. I loved this prompt. I knew exactly where I wanted to go with it right when it was rolled, and I didn't back down from my original idea. I'm so happy that we got this prompt. I'm so happy that I got a fighter. I was nervous at first. Like I said, I don't typically enjoy making fighters, but this was a chance to make one that I would enjoy playing. So I give you the Ersatz Knight, which is another word for synthetic knight, built knight, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is that the 7th level, 10th level, and 15th level features are all interchangeable. You can do them at any time at any of those levels. The ones that are set in stone are 3rd level and 18th level.
Oh,
we'll get into all that.
Okay, all right.
I took a lot of inspiration from like Fallout, Borderlands-esque type of games, because the reality of a cyborg, right, you're grafting technology onto an organic body. So it's like borderline body horror, right? But I wanted to juxtapose that with a very bright, very comical, very camp type of presentation, make it a little bit fun. So here is my introduction for the Ersatz Knight. Hello, soldier. As an expert of martial skill, you've been chosen to pilot a new type of technology. Your mind holds all of the knowledge needed to excel on the battlefield, but with age, your body will only become weaker, and the grand wizards at Arcana Tech Industries want to stop that from happening. Apply today and see exactly how far we can go working together. State-of-the-art projectiles, prosthetics, reactors, and fiber optics are all options for you to add to your arsenal, at the cost of your body parts, of course. Why continue with the use of withering organic husks when you could become a specimen of peak battle performance instead? Just think about how powerful you could become with our enhancements. The only question you should be asking now is, how do I sign up?
I love the heavily corporatized, very Aperture Science sort of vibe, better living through our particular brand of science and augmentation.
I'm sure it won't even hurt that much. Come on in.
That's beautiful.
Let me replace your arms with clamps or whatever. So I broke this subclass down into particular systems. So different physical augmentations that the cyborg could have access to as they choose to put different things onto their body. Mm-hmm. Starting at third level, these are two things set in stone. They kind of are referenced through the rest of the thing. Starting at third level, we have the fortified integumentary system. If, for those of you who have not been in anatomy class since high school, that means the skin, the external part of our body. Many different materials can be used to increase your body's resilience, each with its own benefits. You choose one resistance and one proficiency from the list below. So you just get a bonus resistance and a bonus proficiency.
Amazing.
Acid, cold, fire, lightning, poison, or thunder. Yep. Acrobatics, athletics, intimidation, nature, sleight of hand, or stealth. You choose one of each of those lists. You just get that granted for free.
Very cool.
Also at third level, you have a mounted repulsor system. So you're outfitted with a mounted cannon that can replace one of your attacks on your turn. The special cannon is a ranged weapon with a range of 30 to 60 feet, short and long range respectively. Mm-hmm. You're proficient with it, and you can add either your strength or dexterity modifier to the attack and damage. The damage die is a d6, dealing force damage on a hit, and the die changes as you gain fighter levels. So anytime you would get an extra attack, the die also increases. So d8 gotcha. At level 5, d10 at level 11, and a d12 at level 20.
Very cool.
If you make it all the way without multi-class. Moving on to level 7. So this is my vision for this. 7th level, 10th level, 15th level, all things that you can choose at 7th level. But we'll go in the order here for the sake of simplicity. First section, the first system that we have is the elite sparring system. So this is upper body, arms, hands. Your hands and forearms have been replaced with upgraded Arcana Tech equipment. You gain one of the following features of your choice. I know that I stand alone on this hill, but I took inspiration from my favorite subclass of my favorite class, which is the Hunter Ranger.
Yes.
And I think it is a perfect subclass. I know as you're listening to this, you're disagreeing with me, and I get it. I have stood against the tide for years by myself, and I will remain there forever.
The Hunter is a wonderful subclass. I think it's built really well. Yeah. It allows a lot of versatility. I don't think any option is like way out of line better than any others. I think it's one of the few subclasses that comes with like tiered choices that truly does not have a best choice. It's great. You're absolutely not incorrect.
Well, thank you. There are two of us on the hill now. So
I mean, I don't know if that's my only hill. I'm just saying,
Here's the sparring system. You have three options. We have spring release splints that increase your melee range by 5 feet, an additional 5 feet at level 15. You can also use a reaction to catch physical projectiles if they pass through that range. Hydraulic hammer arms is just a flat damage increase. So once per turn, you add your con modifier to one attack. At level 15, that bonus changes to half of your fighter level rounded down. So even if at early levels you max out your con, it still can scale with your level a little bit later on.
Mm-hmm.
And the last option here, the steel fan bucklers, you gain +1 bonus to your AC, an additional +1 bonus at level 15, and an additional creature of your choice can benefit from this bonus as well if they're standing within your melee range. So you can kind of like maneuver with some forearm shields or whatever.
Yeah.
Cool. The next bracket is the bipedal traversal system. This is all movement-based stuff. Feet and legs, they have been replaced with upgraded equipment. Again, three choices here. We have all-terrain treads, means your movement is unaffected by difficult terrain. The only caveat to that is moving through the space of another creature. We have the gravitational descent boots, or based on what I typed here, the gravitational decent boots. They're quite nice boots. You no longer take damage from falling as long as the distance is equal to 10 times your proficiency bonus or less. So up to 60 feet by level whatever, 17. Don't take any fall damage. Instead, when you land, any creature within 5 feet of you takes that damage instead. So they make a DC 14 saving throw or dex save, and they take 1d6 force damage for every 10 feet you fell on a failure.
Oh,
so you don't take the damage, you impose it on other people that you're falling around.
Like landing zone. Well, that's very cool. I like the additional damage spread out from you when you land. Has some cool vibes.
Option three, we have the nano abjuring shanks. You can't be restrained, and attacks of opportunity are made against you at disadvantage. Cool. So that's just flat bonus for both of those things.
Totally immune to the restrained condition. Is that the grappled condition too, or just restrained?
Just restrained. Just restrained with your bottom half.
Now that makes
more sense. At level 15, we have the cranial optic system. Your eyes and your sensory receptors now have been replaced by upgraded equipment. Again, three options here. We have the Deadeye Reticle, which increases your repulsor cannon's range from 30 and 60 to 60 and 90.
Nice.
And once per turn, you can give yourself advantage on an attack that's made within that short range. So okay. You have free advantage once per turn.
Nice.
The Arcane Heads-Up Display. You have 15 feet of true sight. And you can use the Identify spell at will without the use of material components.
That's very cool.
And then the third one is the thermal eyepiece. You can detect heat signatures up to 100 feet away. This sense permeates full cover unless it is made of lead or more than 6 inches of any other metal. So you register thermal vision, so you can see through walls if there are warm-bodied creatures or flames or things of that nature.
Interesting.
You can pick up on that.
That's so interesting because there isn't really anything else in the game that specifically mentions anything about heat signatures or any sort of heat vision. Really, no monsters have heat vision. They all have, you know, blindsight, true sight, whatever it is. That's so interesting. I'm trying to think of like how I would deal with that as a DM, and like I would have to think about like what would come up, what wouldn't come up in that. Obviously, undead aren't going to work out on that, but
undead
like,
things like
what
oozes.
Does an ooze have any kind of sort of heat? Probably not. Mostly,
I would think maybe the ooze doesn't, but anything that the ooze had recently eaten might still show up if the body.
Sure, like a gelatinous cube would maybe show up
around
with like certain things inside of it would be. That's interesting. That's a fascinating piece of equipment there.
Well, thank you. 18th level. This one is a little bit more complex, but not much. This is the majority of your respiratory and cardiovascular abilities taken over by upgraded equipment. You can either gain two of the following features, so there are four here at level 18, or one of the following features and one of the previous six that you did not choose.
Gotcha.
So you have 10 options, essentially. The four down here, these are basic overall bodily changes. Everything has been kind of external and physical up to this point. We have the artificial dietetic sleeve. You no longer need to eat, breathe, or drink to live. You're also immune to disease and poison.
Beautiful.
You also have the bioreplacement pump. You're immune to exhaustion, petrification, and necrotic damage. You have the time decay postponement shunt. You're immune to magical aging. You no longer age naturally. You no longer need sleep. You can't be put to sleep against your will. And for you, the effects of a long rest can be achieved by engaging in light, motionless activity for no less than 3 hours. So it's marginally less than like the Warforged. And then the last option here is hypercarbon valves. Whenever you're healed by a method that utilizes dice, all dice results are maximized. So that's just a blanket.
That's great.
Healing boost. So those are all a little bit more powerful for the capstone. But again, you can choose to only take one of them and dip back into any of the other three features if you want more prowess anywhere else.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is pretty cool. Because, I can see...
Lots of versatility.
I can see the synergy with certain of the other options that maybe you didn't choose to take that, you know, you might be really split. And having the option to go back and pull one out of there is very cool. Very, very neat. Yeah, I'll be honest. We are not super far off in our concepts here, although I do think you came at it in a very different way, and all of your options are quite different than the ones that I came up with. They even, you know, get chosen in a different way, right? The build versatility here is very different than what I ended up with. But I think that is really good for a fighter, because oftentimes that's why you pick a fighter, right? Is because you want that flexibility to like not be stuck into one box, but be able to adjust, be flexible, do something different down the line. Can you change your third level, the skin feature, the fortified integumentary system choice at any point. Like if you choose acid damage, but then you want to change it at a later level, or is there an option to change that?
Think about that. I think that there should be. That's a really good idea. I maybe just at any later featured level.
Or I think you could put it at any fighter level, or you could put it at any level where you would choose a feature, or even when you get an ability score improvement.
I really like that idea. Maybe I'll add it in on a rest. Yeah. I feel like that's fine. It's not like you're adding anything else. You're just swapping for a different one.
Yeah.
You could build 20 different cyborgs.
Yeah.
With one cyborg.
Yeah. What's the math on?
I have no idea.
All of that, because I'm sure it's crazy. You've got three choices for three different things, and then you've got four choices, or you could do four of those choices plus one of any of the other nine. I don't know. Somebody who's good at statistics, give me the math.
If any listener wants to do that and make that math, I would love to include that in the final write-up.
How many options are there?
Yeah, I'll write a one-shot for you if you tell me the exact math. I would love that.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's very cool. That's very cool. Yeah, I gotta say, I love the flavor of this, like, corporate, what did you call it? Arcanotech Industries.
Yeah,
very good.
They want your mind.
Yeah.
They want you on the battlefield in their stuff.
Indeed.
Sign up today.
The world is waiting for you. For science.
All right, for science. Always. Always. I would love to see how similar your warlock is.
Yeah, yeah. So my immediate thought when I got warlock was, okay, cyborg, warlock. Oh, cool. It's the Cybermen, basically, or the Borg, immediately. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's it. That's the idea we're going for. So, if you will, I will send this over to you. I give you the Hive Mind, Warlock Patron. Your patron is a collective consciousness formed from the melding of flesh and machinery. Mortal minds and bodies are flawed, selfish, and prone to failure. But by submitting to the will of the collective, one can achieve perfection of mind and body, untethered by the ego, and provided with the tools to go beyond one's physical limitations. A member of the Hive Mind can be a part of a vast being, capable of greatness far beyond what can be accomplished alone. A perfect cog in a grand and beautiful machine.
Oh my god. I love that so much.
There we go, baby.
That is amazing. The similarities and differences between yours and my, like, the message is the same.
Yes. Yeah, yours is very glossy. Yours is very shiny. You know, it's got a nice white coat of paint.
The source and performance, vastly different. I love that. This is fantastic.
Yes. This has a slightly, as I think a warlock should, this has a slightly more overt dark quality to it, a little bit more clearly here to improve upon the faults of humanity in a way that is just has a bit more darkness already inherent to it, I think. So because we're talking spellcasting, I think this also adds another element of this, but the way warlocks are built, you know, they have very interesting progression for subclasses. Yeah. Because most of the things that are going to make your warlock are going to be your invocations and your pact boon, which is going to help you, again, define who you are, what your character is all about. So the subclass helps mostly with flavor and with a few mechanical benefits, most of which, in reading a lot of the warlock subclasses, have a pretty strong focus on either defense or just general, like, survivability utility, because you're getting all of your other, like, you're getting a lot of cool flavor from other things. Now, that being said, warlock is already a complicated class with a lot of things to choose from, and I have given you
more
choices. So first of all, the expanded spell list, which comes with every warlock subclass, I've decided to just expand it out to the entire Artificer spell list.
So I love that.
When you have take on the Hive Mind, you can choose an Artificer spell whenever you choose a Warlock spell. Also, at first level, you gain mechanical aptitude, so proficiency with Tinker's Tools, and you learn the Mending cantrip and can cast it on yourself to expend hit dice and heal yourself outside of a short rest. So it's not like a crazy super powerful spell for you to use because you're still expending hit dice, so you're still, you know, just healing yourself with the resources you have. But it works as sort of like a backdoor healing spell for you. But the real meat and potatoes of this subclass is the augmented self. At first level, one of your body parts is replaced and enhanced by a mechanical contraption that serves additional functions. So you can roll randomly for this. I've made a random table. Or you can choose which part of your body has been augmented. So you gain one augmentation at first level, and then you gain more as you progress to 6th, 10th, 14th, and 18th levels. A couple of these can be chosen twice. You've got two arms, you've got two eyes, you've got two legs, and you've got your torso and your brain can all be replaced over the course of this. If you're doing the math at home on that, that's 8 things total.
Much simpler than my count.
8 things total, and you will end up taking 5 by the end. So you will be more machine than man, as they say. So at first, they give you a couple of things. I honestly feel like I should probably tamp these down a little bit, but you know what? I decided to just go hard, so we're going hard.
How very Michael Barlos of you.
Exactly, exactly. The arms can be chosen twice. One of your arms is replaced by a piece of magical technology. You gain the unarmed fighting style, and you gain a +2 bonus to contested grapple checks and dexterity sleight of hand checks for each augmented arm. So if you've got two augmented arms, you get a +4 bonus. And this bonus increases to +3 at level 10 and +4 at level 18. Your brain can be augmented and connected to the larger collective, giving you proficiency in either arcana, history, or religion. You no longer need to sleep and can remain conscious during a long rest, though you must still refrain from strenuous activity to gain the benefits. And you gain resistance to psychic damage.
Love that.
Your eyes can be chosen twice. One of your eyes is replaced by an Arcanotech lens, and you gain the following benefits. Dark vision out to a range of 120 feet, if you don't have it already. And if both eyes are replaced, you also gain the Eldritch Invocation, Devil's Sight. And you can use an action to see through solid matter for 1 minute to a radius of 30 feet. Solid objects within that radius are transparent and don't prevent light from passing through them. And it can penetrate 1 foot of stone, 1 inch of common metal, or up to 3 feet of wood and dirt. Basically works exactly like the ring of X-ray vision, just you've got it in your eye and you don't need to be attuned to it. Once you've used this feature once for each augmented eye, you've got to complete a long rest before you can do it again. So it's once per long rest per eye. Your legs can be chosen twice, so when one of your legs is replaced by this magical technology, your walking speed increases by 10 feet for each augmented leg, and you gain a +2 bonus for each augmented leg on strength ability checks and saving throws to resist being moved against your will. And then when your torso is replaced, your midsection becomes augmented by wires and gears covered in a metallic coating, giving you a +1 bonus to AC. You no longer need to eat or drink, and you have advantage on saving throws against being poisoned and gain resistance to poison damage. And finally, you count as one size larger when determining your carrying capacity and the weight you can push, drag, or lift. I do think some of those probably need to be balanced a little bit more, because as you will see, at 6th level, your whatever you choose starts to become enhanced more. So at 6th level, your augmentations grant you additional defensive bonuses, including the arm becoming a shielding arm with which you can cast the shield spell without expending a spell slot once per long rest for each augmented arm. When your brain reaches 6th level and you've chosen your brain as an augmentation, your hive mind brain is especially resilient to mental attacks and you gain advantage on wisdom and intelligence saving throw. Your eyes become perceptive eyes that can see threats coming a split second before they hit, So you cannot be surprised while you are conscious, and you can use a reaction once per long rest to apply disadvantage on an attack made against you. Your legs become swift legs, making them quicker to react, so you gain advantage on dexterity saving throws. And when you are subjected to an effect that allows you to make a dexterity saving throw to take only half damage, you can use your reaction to take no damage once per long rest per leg. So, and then your torso becomes a powerful core, giving you resistance to all non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage, and advantage on strength saving throws. So that's sort of your, like, second tier. So at sixth level, you will pick a second augmentation, and then both of your augmentations will gain some new ability. And right. When you choose more augmentations down the line, they will have that enhanced ability as well. At 10th level, you have a bolstered mind. So you become immune to the charmed and frightened conditions as you become more machine-like. In addition, when you are forced to make a constitution saving throw to maintain concentration on a spell, if the DC would exceed your warlock level, it becomes equal to your warlock level instead.
That's so good. I don't know of another feature in the game like that.
Yeah, I don't think there is one. And yeah, it kind of has a weird quality to it where, like, actually the time when it is the most powerful and useful is kind of when you get it, which I don't know if that works or not. I just decided to keep it.
It kind of reverse balances everything else, though, maybe.
As I think maybe else, it does.
So powerful. Because once you hit 18th level, you have five augmentations all perfected, and your bolstered mind just, like, doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's a very, like, good point.
I like strong builds. I think that they're... There are ways for DMs to circumvent strong builds other than throwing high HP monsters at you.
Yeah.
And this is the type of subclass that makes a game master think, and I like it a lot. But please continue.
Well, let's get into the final feature of it. At 14th level, you have a perfected form. So you are more machine than flesh, and your creature type becomes construct rather than humanoid. And your augmentations gain additional benefits. Your arms become pummeling arms, which carry the weight of a hammer blow. When you hit a creature with a melee weapon attack or an unarmed strike, you can force the target to make a strength saving throw or be pushed back 15 feet and knocked prone. If both of your arms are augmented, the target makes this saving throw with disadvantage. Your brain becomes an opened mind. Your knowledge extends to the entire hive mind, and when you roll below your warlock level on an intelligence or wisdom ability check, you can treat the roll as equal to your warlock level. Your eyes become razor sharp. Your enhanced eyes see more clearly than a hunting hawk. You add +5 to your passive perception and passive investigation scores for each augmented eye. So you can have a +10, plus whatever other maybe you gain from a feat. Or whatever else you have. So it can be pretty hardcore there. Your legs become multifunctional legs. Your mechanically improved legs give you additional ways to move, so you gain the ability to move up, down, and across vertical surfaces and upside down along ceilings while leaving your hands free. And if both your legs are augmented, you also gain a flying speed equal to your walking speed, but can fly no higher than 30 feet off the ground. Got rocket feet, you know. And your torso becomes a fortified body. Your torso is near impenetrable. You gain resistance to magical bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. And whenever you complete a long rest, you can choose one damage type, either acid, cold, fire, lightning, or thunder damage, and gain resistance to the chosen damage type until the end of your next long rest. All right. So yeah, I didn't add any damage to any of these top level features just because I think that would be too much already.
Pushed and prone is big. I actually decided the other way because I had, for my arm feature that increased damage, I initially had prone as a feature there too. And I was like, that's way too much. If somebody takes that at level 7, that's going to be nuts, because you can just, like, especially as a fighter, I guess maybe it's more insidious as a fighter to knock somebody prone and laser them 4 times.
But I think that's sort of the thing that I was thinking of as well, is that, like, this is a warlock, so, you know, there is maybe a possibility that this could be built as a frontliner, and it would work. Absolutely. But it also is the kind of thing where it's not going to put you anywhere near what a fighter would be at level 14, right? What they would be able to output at that level, because your focus is, as a warlock, kind of in a different place. So these things, while they can be very helpful, might also not necessarily figure into every single warlock's playstyle, even if they are very powerful. Yeah. It's not going to be an optimal choice for a ranged warlock to choose, you know, the arms and the torso as much as it is the legs to get some bonus to movement speed.
Depends on party makeup too.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're a party full of casters, maybe you take both arms and both legs, and you are the front line of all of your wizard and sorcerer friends that are squishier than you.
Yeah. I also did consider for a while not including the option to choose your augmentations. For a while, I just had it as it was a rollable table, and that's it. Like, if you roll the same thing twice, you get both arms, but like, if you roll an arm again, you can't have another one. But beyond that, it's all completely random. Like, the collective chooses for you what you need to be, which I kind of like, theoretically.
That's really interesting. I think if I was a player using this, I would go that route, because that's so fun. I always love just letting the game kind of tell me how I'm going to play.
Yeah.
And that is the perfect example of that.
I have quite a few players who would also do that as well. And they are my favorites. The ones who are just like, you know what, we are just going to see what happens and figure out how to make it work. But I decided in the end to add the option to choose, because people like choice, even though as a warlock, you're already making like 5 million choices. So,
well, neither of us shied away from the inclusion of too many choices today.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Pretty apparent.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a good time with this. I'm glad that we both had a good time with this one, for sure.
Yeah.
It seems like...
It was a good week. I wouldn't say an easy week. I felt like I was stretched in a very good way. This was a fun prompt.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to open up our prompt list so that we can see what we're going to make next time.
I believe I rolled last time, so you have the honors this week.
Ah, yes, indeed. That's a 2, baby.
A 2. We're traveling back to the world of feats. A 2 is a series of feats based on the 7 deadly sins.
Oh, who'd that come out from?
That is from... So you want to be a dungeon master.
Hey, thanks, Justin. Did we already do one from Justin?
We sure did.
We sure did. It was the magic item with the scaled character level effects.
Oh, yeah.
So, the magic item that scaled with the character level was Justin on So You Want to Be DM.
Also a great prompt.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Thanks again, Justin. Series of feats based on the 7 deadly sins. That could be very interesting. You like to pull from, like, concepts that exist in the real world as sort of like sets of things. So that could be very fun.
I wonder how that process will work when the concept is already there. what else am I going to pull from outside of that to apply internally? If you, the listener, have a prompt that you'd like to see used on the show, we would love to hear from you. You can reach out to us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or you can find us on TikTok and send us a message. I am there at Michael_Barlos, and Dan is on TikTok at SirDrK. So please find us, send us a message. We'd love to talk to you.
Well, I'm interested, Michael, to see what kind of feats you come up with. Hopefully we don't get too eerily similar again, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We'll leave it at that for now so that both of us can stew for a bit on our sins. Yeah. We'll come back next time in about a week after we've come up with something fun. Anything you want to say to the people before we call it a day?
I always have something that I would love to say to the people before we say goodbye. Today's is very short. Thank you for listening. I'm doing this, we just said, 6-7 weeks. I don't know the exact count right now. Thank you for being here. If you've listened to all of our episodes up to this point, we really appreciate this, because we're having a lot of fun, and we hope that you are too.
Thank you so much, Michael. That's great.
Thank you, Dan.
And thank you, listener. And we will be back with you in a week. Until then,
in a week.
This is the College of Creation. Class dismissed. I don't know if I'm saying that anymore. Anyway, bye. Take care of yourselves. Hey, y'all. Thanks for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and all our past episodes, you can find those for free on our Patreon page at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide you want to become a patron, you'll also automatically get access to any revised versions of these creations, plus our patron Discord and bonus chats with Michael and me, where we just talk about anything and everything D&D. We play games, we have a good time. You can send your homebrew prompts and questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Our music is by Fuser Wolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. Listening, and we will see you right here again next week.